So this morning we'll conclude that little subsection of Psalms called the Psalms of Ascent or Pilgrimage, and we're beginning with Psalm 132. As I hope you'll discover when we get to it, it's a ceremonial chant and it recalls the transfer of the Ark to David's city, which you'll find the story of that in 2 Samuel 6, when David captured the city. He brought the ark from Shiloh, where it was kept, down into the newly captured city of Jerusalem. And it recalls also the link between David's desire to build God a house and God's promise to build David a house. David says, I want to build you a house. And God says, what do you want to build me a house for? The whole world's mine. I'm building you a house. Your dynasty, in other words. That story is found in 2 Samuel 7. I hope you don't, when you're reading any of these stories about David or so on, don't think of history as a genre. It's people long time later, like the stories of King Arthur, in a way. That's probably our nearest example. It shows you how they looked at things 300 years later, rather than what happened. But it's quite beautiful stories. And there are elements in this psalm that suggest that it comes from the time of the chronicler. Well, obviously I haven't got the skill to tell you that, but some of the scholars say that, so I'm handing it on to you. And here's a statement from the Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 6, that would be from about the 300s, perhaps 400 at the earliest, but in the 300s. And 2 Chronicles reads, now rise up, Yahweh God, go to your resting place, you and the ark of your might. Let your priests, Yahweh God, be clothed with salvation, and let your faithful rejoice in your goodness. Yahweh God, do not reject your anointed one. Remember your steadfast love for your servant David. However, as against that suggestion, it's not certain that such a ceremony would have actually taken place at that time, the time of the Chronicles, since the Ark may not have featured any longer in the Jerusalem cult. The Ark, which was a palladium, I think is the technical term. It was a standard or a symbol of Davidic dynasty power. That's what the ark was used for. And when the last of the kings was taken into exile, Jeconiah in 597, the beginning of the 6th century, the ark doesn't appear anymore. Maybe it was destroyed. There's a legend in the Second Maccabees that Jeremiah hid it and that it would be discovered when the new temple would be built. But the story, legend. But the ark just vanishes from the story. So maybe it didn't exist. And by the time of Jesus, the inside, the Holy of Holies, was simply empty. Just an empty space. No ark. Well, part one of our psalm then. It's got two parts, and part one is a prayer for the king. And it begins, Yahweh, remember in David all the favour, all the hardships he endured. And you might think of the suffering servant of Isaiah. He bore all our infirmities, he carried our diseases, yet we accounted him stricken, struck down by God and afflicted. The Acts of the Apostles in chapter 7, that's the speech by Stephen before the Sanhedrin, and he says, David found favour with God and asked that he might find a dwelling place for the house of Jacob. So that was the tradition. Now, verse 6, we heard of it in Ephrathah. We found it in the fields of Yar. Let us go to his dwelling place. Let us worship at his footstool. So what's being recalled there is the transfer of the Ark to Jerusalem, and perhaps it's being ceremonially enacted as they, in this psalm, perhaps this is a hymn, while they go through the ceremony reminding everyone of this event. Ephrathah needs a bit of explanation, maybe. It's mentioned in Genesis in a few places, and in 1 Samuel and Ruth and Micah, so it's commonly mentioned in the Bible. It refers to the region of Bethlehem, just south of Jerusalem. And we know that David came from Bethlehem, which is in the territory of Ephrathah. So that's the district. First Chronicles talks about Ephrathah, the father of Bethlehem. The fields of Yar refers to Kiriat Yarim, where the ark was installed when it was captured back from the Philistines. And that story, the Philistines attacked Shiloh, stole the ark, and that was one of the biggest in the story. That's the event that galvanized their determination to have a king in Israel. Up till then, it was just pretty random, and if someone needed help, they'd chop an animal into 12 parts, so the story goes, and send a part of the animal, and then that would call the troops, but they weren't a standing army. That was just whoever was willing to come, and then they'd come to the defence of Dan or Simeon or whoever. And maybe they'd come, maybe they wouldn't, but by the time they arrived, it was generally too late, as you'd well imagine. So when the Philistines, who controlled the plain because they had iron and chariots and iron spears and that, but they couldn't, of course, control the highlands, but they did in about the year 1070 or 1080, they did get as far as Shiloh and destroyed the sanctuary and stole the ark. And that's not far from Jerusalem. So obviously they realised they had to do something better. So they wanted a king. And that's where Samuel anointed Saul. I'm telling you too much, but anyhow, Saul was a compromise candidate because Joseph was the big tribe of what we call Samaria, the hill country, divided into Ephraim and Manasseh. And they swept over the Jordan into the other side as well, the Transjordanian area. So that was Joseph was a big tribe. Judah was a big, they were the two big ones, and poor little Benjamin was the tiniest, just wedged in between them. So they got their first king, was Saul, because they could control him. He couldn't do anything without agreement of both those big tribes. And that's the occasion. So they're going back and telling the story of the ark, which they heard of in Ephrathah, Bethlehem, and they found it in the fields of Yar. Rise up, Yahweh. Go to your resting place, you and the ark of your might. So just a few little texts that might associate with that verse. Numbers 10 says, whenever the ark set out, Moses would say, arise, Yahweh. Let your enemies be scattered and your foes flee before you. You rise up, Yahweh, etc., the ark of your might. You can see the similarity there. Psalm 68, verse 1. Let God rise up. Let his enemies be scattered. Let those who hate him flee before him. 1 Chronicles. King David rose to his feet and said, hear me, my brothers, my people. I had planned to build a house of rest for the ark of the covenant of Yahweh, for the footstool of our God. And in the book of Revelations, God's temple in heaven was opened and the ark of his covenant was seen within his temple. Verse 9 of part 1 of Psalm 132 reads, let your priests be properly attired and let your faithful shout for joy. So the priests are to be clothed. So it seems like it's a psalm for a reenactment of some kind of a ceremony. The priests are to be clothed in the right vestments for the occasion, obviously. And they're to do God's will in everything. The word faithful, we've often met it. There's the Hebrew in English lettering. The Hasidim are those who welcome God's covenant love The Hebrew is chesed. You can obviously see the connection. And they're faithful to the covenant. So that's the word often used of the faithful people. They welcome God's chesed and they keep the covenant with God. Verse 10, for your servant David's sake, do not deny audience to your anointed one. That's the present king, the one who is the descendant of the dynasty of David. So you looked after David, look after our king. Part two then, having prayed for the king, talks about God's commitment to David's dynasty and to the temple. Verse 11. Yahweh gave David under oath a promise that he will not turn back. A son of yours I will set on your throne. And what, look at the if here. Because in the Bible it's very tricky, really. Often it looks like God gave an unconditional covenant that there will always be a king, a dynasty of David. Many texts say that. Others have an if in there, which is obviously very realistic. It's on the proviso that the king actually is faithful to God's will. So if your sons keep my covenant and my decrees that I shall teach them, their sons also forevermore shall sit on your throne. So this is a powerful affirmation of faith at the time when there was no king in Judah. The king, last king was 598. Note that the promise made by God is conditional. And the writers of the New Testament, of course, saw this promise realized in Jesus, the son of David. So they called him the Messiah, the son of David, the inheritor of the promises made by God. Acts 2:30, Peter says, since he was a prophet, David knew that God had sworn with an oath to him that he would put one of his descendants on his throne. So there's the speech commenting on this psalm and then about to apply it to Jesus. But he says, well, he's the one. He's the one who fulfills that hope and promise. Verse 13, for Yahweh has chosen Zion. He wants it for his residence. This is my resting place forever. Here I will reside, for I want it. I will abundantly bless its provisions. I will satisfy its poor with bread. Its priests I will clothe with salvation. We've already talked about the vestments of the priest. Now, of course, it's gone into a metaphor. Its priests I will clothe with salvation. Its faithful will shout for joy. There I will cause a horn to sprout up for David. I have prepared a lamp for my Holy One. A horn, power, strength, victory, bugle horn to the sound, the shofar. On that day, Ezekiel 29, looking in exile, looking forward to when all the promises are fulfilled. On that day, I will cause a horn to sprout up for the house of Israel, and I will open your lips among them. Then they shall know that I am Yahweh. And Psalm 18, it is you who are my lamp. Yahweh, my God, lights up my darkness. By you I can crush a troop, and by my God I can leap over a wall. That's into a city and win the victory. And our psalm concludes, verse 18, his enemies I will clothe with disgrace, but on him, the king, his royal crown will blossom. And I'm reminded of the second book of Kings, chapter 11. He brought out the king's son, Joash, put a crown on him, and gave him the covenant. They proclaimed him king and anointed him. They clapped their hands and shouted, "Long live the king!"